Hey guys, welcome back to Daily Kaylee. Today's episode is the last installment of The Night Stalker. After today, I'll be working on 13 Days of Halloween, and that starts October 1st. I am so freaking excited for the first annual 13 Days of Halloween. Halloween is my favorite holiday, and Shannon doesn't really get the hype, and it really bothers me, so I'm trying to get him to broaden his horizons a little bit. So, I'm hoping my hype over recording a podcast for 31 days straight will show him how dedicated I really am. So, today I've also been working super hard on the Kaylee Cosmetics Halloween launch. So, I want you to pause this and stop whatever the hell you're doing and go to shopkayleecosmetics.com and check it out. Pretty much every single product that I created was inspired by my 13 Days of Halloween lineup. Okay, let's jump right into Richard Ramirez. So, last week, we left off on his last crime committed in Los Angeles. At this time, he was super obsessed with himself and was following the coverage of his crimes on the news. So he pretty much knew exactly what the police knew about him, which wasn't much, which is fucking ridiculous, given all of the crimes that he has committed, all of the evidence they have against him. They have his DNA file, and they still pretty much know nothing about who the Night Stalker is. So whatever. So, on August 18th, 1985, Richard was in San Francisco. In the middle of the night, he entered the home of Peter and Barbara Pan. He shot Peter, who was asleep, with a .25 caliber handgun, and then he beat and sexually assaulted Barbara before he shot her in the head and left her to die. While he was still at the crime scene, he used Barbara's lipstick to draw a pentagram on the wall. And underneath the pentagram, he wrote with the lipstick the phrase, "Jack the Knife." Which makes no sense, by the way. After it was discovered that his shoe print from Los Angeles matched the same shoe print at the crime scene, San Francisco's mayor gathered the information and had a televised press conference to let the citizens of San Francisco know. The detectives on the case were extremely pissed off that she did this because they knew that he was obsessed with himself and would obviously follow the media coverage. So now Richard knows that they're connecting his crimes. Obviously, this would make him be more careful, you would assume. That is what the detectives assumed. But all he did was, after watching the televised press conference, he took his shoes and dropped them over the side of the Golden Gate Bridge. After this, he stayed in the area for a few more days just to make sure everything was cooling down, and then he went back to Los Angeles. So they really did nothing in San Francisco. Do I think that the mayor giving out this information hindered the case in any way? No, not really. If the Los Angeles Police Department had been doing their job, he would have already been caught, and he would have never been in San Francisco. So no, I don't think what she did was wrong whatsoever. I just wish the goddamn police department was a little bit smarter. Okay, so, a few days later, on August 24th, 1985, Richard traveled 76 miles south of Los Angeles in a stolen Toyota to Mission Bayo. That night, he broke into the home of James Romero Jr., who had actually literally just returned from a family vacation. Romero had a son who was 13 years old, and he actually was awake when he heard Richard Ramirez approach the house. Thinking that this was just like some creepy dude casing their house, he woke up his parents, and obviously Richard realized they were awake and he fled the scene. However, James ran outside and took notes on the color, make, and model of the car, and he got part of the license plate number. He contacted the police with his information. He had no idea that this was the Night Stalker, obviously. He just thought that maybe he had chased away a thief. The same night after this encounter, Richard broke into the house of Bill Carnes, who was 30, and his fiancée, Inez Erickson. I think I'm saying that right. I really have no fucking idea how to say any of these names, and it makes me feel so uncultured. Anyways, he broke into their house at the back door, entered their bedroom while they were asleep. He cocked his handgun, and that is when he woke up Bill Carnes. After waking him up, he shot him 3 times in the head before he went on to his fiancée. Richard actually told this woman that he was the Night Stalker, and basically forced her to swear that she loved Satan, as he beat her with his fist and bound her from her fiancé's neckties that he found in the closet. After robbing the house and stealing anything he could find that was valuable, he dragged Erickson to another room to rape her. He then demanded that she give him cash and more jewelry, which she did not have, and then made her swear on Satan again that there wasn't any. Before he left the house, he left Erickson alive, and he told her to tell them that the Night Stalker was here. She untied herself and went to the neighbor's house to get help for her severely injured fiancé after being shot 3 times, and he actually survived his injuries. So, congrats, Inez, you did a great job. She gave a very detailed description to investigators, and they got a cast of another footprint from the house before that he had tried to rob. They found his stolen car August 28th in Wilshire Center, Los Angeles, and they actually found one single fingerprint from the rearview mirror, even though they could tell that Richard had tried to very carefully wipe the car clean. After scanning the fingerprint, it was obviously identified as belonging to Richard, who at the time was described as a 25-year-old drifter from Texas. He obviously had a super long list of crimes. A lot of them were literally just being arrested for traffic violations. And, of course, illegal drug violations. After careful consideration, I'm sure, they decided to release a mugshot of him from December 12th, 1984, This is the first time that the Night Stalker actually has a face to go with the crimes. This was huge news. They had a press conference and basically they were speaking directly to Richard. They said, "We now know who you are and soon everyone else will. There will be no place that you can hide." I'm actually not even sure if Richard saw this. Even though he was obsessed with himself, I feel like after this he was super messy. Like, he didn't give a shit anymore. He was like, whatever, I'm just gonna kill people and be done. On August 30th, 1985, Richard got on a bus to Tucson, Arizona to visit his brother. And at this time, he was unaware that he was literally the lead story in every single major newspaper and TV program across California. He, for some reason, did not get to meet his brother in Tucson, and he returned to Los Angeles early the next morning. He literally walked right past police officers who were staking out the bus terminal in hopes of catching him trying to flee Los Angeles. Which, they were too fucking late. He literally left Los Angeles the day before. Whatever. Anyways, he walked right past them and went into a convenience store in East LA. A group of elderly Mexican women caught this man. Not the police. He heard these women, like, whispering to each other, super scared, basically referring to him as the killer. After this, he actually started to notice his surroundings, and he literally saw the newspaper rack in the store, and his face was printed on the front page of every single newspaper. He fled the store, super panicked, ran across the Santa Ana freeway, attempted to carjack a woman, but was chased away by a bunch of innocent bystanders, and they followed him. They were like, hell no, you're not getting away, this is ridiculous. After hopping over several fences and attempting to carjack 2 more women, He was eventually taken down by a group of residents, and one of them actually struck him over the head with a metal bar. They held him down and beat him until the police finally arrived. Citizen's arrest, baby. Citizen's arrest. His trial did not begin for 3 more years. On July 22nd, 1988 is when they decided to actually start selecting the jury. At his very first court appearance, Richard raised his hand with a hand-drawn pentagram on it and yelled, "Hail Satan!" Beautiful. On August 3rd, 1988, the Los Angeles Times reported that some of the jail employees had overheard Richard planning to shoot the prosecutor, which apparently he intended to smuggle into the courtroom. I don't know how this would have worked, but they installed a metal detector anyway and conducted extensive searches on anyone who entered the courtroom. Now, this is when it gets kind of weird. On August 14th, the trial was literally interrupted because one of the jurors, Phyllis Singletary? Singletary? I'm going to go with Singletary. Yes, Singletary. Okay. Sorry, I can't read. She did not arrive to court that day. Later that day, they actually found her shot to death in her apartment. Now, obviously, everyone thought that somehow Richard was behind this. Somehow. They were terrified, and a lot of them obviously did not want to return to court. It was eventually determined that he could have not been responsible for this. And she was actually shot and killed by her boyfriend, who committed suicide later that day with the same weapon in the hotel. Yeah. Lots of crazy things happening this year in Los Angeles. On September 20th, 1989, over a year later, Richard was finally convicted of all charges. 13 counts of murder, 5 attempted murders, 11 sexual assaults, and 14 burglaries. He committed so many more crimes that they just could not pin on him at this time. They didn't have enough evidence, but they knew that he was responsible. During the penalty phase of the trial, on November 7th, 1989, he was sentenced to die in California's gas chamber. Leaving the courthouse after the death sentences, he spoke to reporters, and all he said was, "Big deal. Death always went with the territory. See you in Disneyland." He really did not give a single shit. This trial cost almost $2 million, which, as of 2019, that would have been almost $4 million. At the time, this was the most expensive trial with the most extensive news coverage until the O.J. Simpson case, which was 5 to 10 years later. Okay, so Richard had never had any romantic love interest anywhere in his life until he went to prison. He had fans who were basically like bombarding him with letters and trying to visit him in prison. But this one fan, she was number one. In 1985, Doreen Leoy wrote him nearly 75 letters while he was in prison. In 1988, Ramirez proposed to Leoy, and on October 3rd, 1996, they were married in San Quentin State Prison. For many, many years, Doreen stated that she would commit suicide when Richard was executed because she loved him so much. However, she eventually left him. There's no reports of why she left him. I'm assuming she got sick of being married to a fucking serial killer who's literally gonna die in prison, but that's just my guess. Before he died in 2013, he was engaged to a 23-year-old female writer. A lot of people thought he would literally spend 60 years in prison. They thought he'd be in his 70s or 80s before his execution was ever carried out because California has the longest appeals process. The longest. It wasn't until August 7th, 2006 that his first round of appeals had finally ended. Because the California Supreme Court upheld his convictions and his death sentence, obviously. A month later, they denied his request for a rehearing, but he still had appeals pending until the time he died because he would not give up. He actually died of complications to B-cell lymphoma at Marin General Hospital in California on June 7th, 2013. He also had hepatitis C and suffered from chronic substance abuse. So all of these contributed to his complications. But he was 53 years old when he died, and he had been on death row for more than 23 years. He was evaluated by a psychiatrist before he died, who determined that he was not born a psychopath. He turned into one. And that is the end of Richard Ramirez. I will see you guys next week with the very first episode of Daily Kaylee's 13 Days of Halloween. I love you.